Saving money now during Menards Bag Sale. All prices after 15% bag sale discount. Pick up a six-pack of LED light bulbs for just $2.97. Get a wood or fiberglass claw hammer for only $2.29 each. 52-ounce bottles of Ajax dish soap, just $2.97. And 12 packs of Shasta soda in assorted flavors are only $4.19. Don't miss out on Menards Bag Sale happening now. Good through January 12th. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Moncrief on News Talk.
In order for your team to move on, someone must sacrifice themselves, meaning that they will have to, at their own will, walk away from $5 million just so some of you can continue competing in these games.
Really thinking right now, I probably should have taken that $20K.
So if you didn't take the money to go home, why would you sacrifice yourself for the team?
I feel like I have to sacrifice myself. I just want people to know I really do care about them.
That's Beast Games. There are new episodes every Thursday on Amazon Prime Video. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
Sounds awful.
Yeah, no, like...
I'm just basing it on the clip. That's harsh.
See, I have to be delicate in how I approach this because... So, I mean, do you know who Mr. Beast is?
No.
Okay, so Mr. Beast is the pseudonym of Jimmy Donaldson, and he is, by a mile, the most successful YouTuber in the world.
Right? Okay, now like, I know who you're talking about.
To give you a bit of context, he signed a deal with Amazon, and to be honest, he doesn't need Amazon. Amazon arguably needs him, which is why they're paying him $100 million to make a number of shows.
Crikey.
And in doing so, but to kind of really put things in perspective, this show, which debuted this week, with two opening episodes, which involves 1,000 Americans playing for a $5 million prize, right? For like however many weeks in increasingly bizarre, weird games, okay? But before he debuted the 1,000 people episode on YouTube, he launched his own 2,000 contestant episode where he then cut them in half. And that already has in 3 days 88 million views, right? So he is like... He has the golden Midas touch when it comes to YouTube. And he's a very kind of intriguing character whose content I have never consumed, right? But like he basically would say himself that he spent years obsessively looking at virality on YouTube, trying to like sort of crack a code of how to go viral on YouTube, and clearly has done so. His breakthrough video was actually nearly 24 hours long and just involved him counting from zero to 100,000 or something like that, right? So he has spun that into a absolute media empire ever since then. And as I said, he doesn't need Amazon, but Amazon arguably does need him. Now, Amazon is a reasonably successful streamer, right? It's not up in the same league as Netflix in terms of like subscribers. Mm. But they want, obviously, they're all every streamer is looking for content, fresh content. And if you have a bankable known person like Mr. Beast, who is able to produce, film, edit, cobble together an entire concept and an outlandishly massive one at that, that's pretty safe hands to put yourself into. But obviously with it comes all of the Mr. Beast eccentricities and YouTube style. By that I mean incredibly fast cuts and like screaming almost at the camera. You know, like Mr. Beast himself walks around this contest and he is supposedly interacting with the participants, but really he's just talking directly and mugging to the camera the whole time. And whether or not you like his previous material will perhaps inform whether or not you like this. And having never seen it before, it kind of put me off. But I'm also really aware that like the reviews of this have been scathing, and I don't want to just like jump on that bandwagon either. I really wanted to think about it.
Right? Okay, I'm glad. It's very thoughtful and considerate.
And I hated it. Right?
Yes. So, but is this Squid Game esque?
Right. So, yes and no, right? So, like, it's Squid Game esque in the sense that it is all of these challenges that are completely and utterly unfair in how they're devised, but obviously it doesn't end in them being murdered and pummeled to death, which will happen this Thursday when Squid Game season 2 is released. So if you just want to see that, I mean, it's on its way. Here you get really like odd things, right? So like what is undeniable is the scale of the production is impressive, right? Even to just have 1,000 participants in a single set is really, really incredible. And it was all built, I think, in Nevada and to questionable ethical standards, because already a class action lawsuit is being put against Mr. Beast and his production team for how many people were treated on set. But like, it starts off with people standing in these really long rows, and when they are eliminated through various games, you know, a platform door opens underneath them and they disappear, never to be seen ever again. Fundamentally, the problem is, like, a show, obviously a show like Squid Game, which is about this kind of world, quote unquote, right, is centered around a number of characters, and the dramatic heft of it is because we follow them and we either like them or don't like them. You root for them, you root against them.
Yes.
Here we have 1,000 participants who barely feature at all. By that I mean, like, within the first episode, they're already whittled down to 500. So no character among them has yet really emerged, because, I mean, half of them are already gone. I think by the end of episode 2, there's still about 400 of them left, right? And even that is too grand a scale of a number for a viewer to really buy into the concept. So instead, you're supposed to buy into the Mr. Beastism of it all. Mm. And for that, you have him walking around with his usual sidekicks from his media empire, Sean Klitzner, Tyler Conklin, and Mac Hopkins, who are so interchangeable that, like, I mean, I was just making sounds there for the sake of it. Like, as in, they are completely indistinguishable, and what they actually bring to the show, I do not know.
Okay.
I found it loud, I found it pointless, I found it uninteresting and really tiresome. And I'm only 2 episodes into, I think, like 10.
Yeah. What kind of challenges did they have to do?
Okay, so like, they do, obviously there's the grand scale ones where they're trying to eliminate as many people as possible right at the beginning,
yeah,
right? So for, you know, for the one we heard in the clip there, I think by that point there were maybe, like, let's just say 800 people left in the show, and they're standing in lines, they're all teams, and somebody within that team has to sort of eliminate themselves for their entire team to get through. So I found there was a kind of a vein of bullying running through the whole show, because there are several times where it's like, get one person to eliminate themselves, and then teams are kind of turning on each other. Then in order to sweeten the deal, often Mr. Beast, Jimmy, is offering cash bribes to people to also quit the show. Other games are like, they have create this big tower and they have to compete against each other in the tower, catching balls as they fall, doing trivia. As we go into the show, based on the various teasers that we see, there's a pirate ship shooting cannonballs to come. There's a train that's meant to be running down people, but you can see it's clearly not going to do that, although who knows what the class action lawsuit is going to reveal. But all in, it's these big concept games. And Mr. Beast's YouTube channel is built on that. So he is known for, like, he started off obviously counting to 100,000, right? Mm. And struck gold with that. But since then has created these very lavish productions that involve huge numbers of contestants. Like, I would kind of liken it a bit to the kind of scale that, you know, Top Gear, you know, those kind of stunty things that they used to do, but obviously on YouTube first, right? And how does he attract people to do it? He picks other YouTubers who want to break rich in the YouTube game and are very keen to get involved. And through that, his empire has grown, and now it has attracted the attention of Amazon. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's the number one show on Amazon in Ireland. I'm sure it's the number one show on Amazon all over the world. It almost seems like too big to fail, in the sense that he has this innately huge audience already ready to go. But as a critical thing, I'm afraid I have to err on the side of it just not being very good TV.
But obviously money's been spent on
huge,
this.
Huge sums of money, yes.
Yeah. Oh, God. Just want to tell people about my new YouTube channel where I scratch myself for 3 days. Our next show is La Palma. You can stream the entire miniseries now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
This entire crack, it was not there a week ago.
You can see the dead bats. I measured high concentration of carbon and sulfur dioxide in the air. So something must have happened recently.
Your rainy seasons have become longer and more powerful. And because of climate change, the temperatures are rising. So does the cloud layers, which means it rains more in the mountains. All of this water, it's removing the friction between the stone layers so that this crack...
The mountains move all the time. And that gas you are talking about, Hauku,
UFO people soon know that there are small pockets of gas in all volcanic areas.
We're talking about an entirely new gap inside the cave. I mean, who knows what it could lead to? Earthquakes? Avalanches?
Okay, that's enough. You talk about climate change, cracks and mountains moving, and all this after being here for a month?
Wow. Okay, so this is like a Christmas catastrophe movie or series?
Right? So, like, I mean, yeah, the damage that Die Hard has done, right?
Yes.
That's not like, that's now a Christmas movie, so we can turn to any genre we want. And look, I can't complain. Black Doves is probably one of my favourite TV shows of the year. That was an espionage drama based at Christmas. And along comes a follow-up in the form of a disaster movie-esque series, right? So it's set on La Palma, one of the Canary Islands, one that perhaps people hadn't heard of really until the volcano went off there a couple of years ago.
Oh. Yeah.
So there is on the island of La Palma a very large volcano, and its mountainous area is called the Cumbre Vieja, and there is a hypothesis that an earthquake or eruption could lead this Manhattan-sized part of rock to go into the Atlantic, causing a mega tsunami that would destroy all of the Canary Islands and reach as far as North America and unfortunately Ireland as well, should it happen.
Yeah.
Right? And the series so this is how you know Netflix is really the world's like channel. It's because this is about a Norwegian family on holiday in La Palma, and a Norwegian volcanologist, hydrogeologist, couldn't quite make out what she was, who is also on the island, who is sort of ringing alarm bells that this is imminently about to happen, while Spanish authorities ignore her warnings. And
okay,
of
that
course,
never happens.
And of course, by episode two, finally things start to kick off, right? Now, what I would say is, like, you need to go into this looking for the camp side of disaster movies, right? And I actually had much higher hopes for it when I did a bit of research into who was behind it. So it's written by a guy named, now my Norwegian pronunciation isn't great, but Lars Gudmestad, who wrote Headhunters, which is this really brilliant thriller with Jaime Lannister from Game of Thrones in it, in Norwegian a few years ago. It's like, it is fantastic. It's like a, you know, good 90 minute straightforward thriller, fantastic stuff. And I thought, yes, this is going to be that kind of gold, right? And instead it is quite a maudlin kitchen sink drama about this Norwegian family staying at a hotel with their daughter being going through some identity moments, the parents having like a fractious marriage, and basically just every kind of cliche you could imagine, right? And then you would expect them then to be padding out the rest of the cast with kind of goodies and baddies, people who have pets that will be saved in the final moment,
yes,
and baddies who will be burnt to death in lava flows. But instead, they don't really do any of that. And like, our other hero, the geologist, is a survivor of the 2004 tsunami. So that's why she's so triggered by this potential catastrophe again. And all in, When the bad stuff happens, it kind of gets a bit of energy going, but like, it doesn't have that kind of grammar of disaster movies that I was expecting. Like, as in, the pet doesn't get saved and the villains don't really die, but plenty of other nameless Spaniards do without much consequence, while they're flashing back to Oslo, where the Department of Foreign Affairs is trying to negotiate a rescue mission for Norwegian stranded on the Canary Islands. So like, all in, it was a bit more maudlin than I was expecting it to be, and kind of less fun than I wanted it to be, because when you approach disaster, the whole thing is that the scale of it is supposed to be so outlandishly silly and grand that it's like enjoyable. Like, in some way you're almost rooting for the tsunami to come, you know, at some point and get rid of the baddies. But instead, the baddies here are just like societal problems.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the tsunami can't wash them away. So like, look, it's only four parts. At times, when what I did marvel at, like when it got down to the nitty gritty, was how even TV can now make disaster look very realistic. You know, like, the CGI is very, very well done. There's a very effective airplane moment in the second episode. The wave looks really, really realistic, and it all ends, you know, happily ever after, as you kind of would expect it to. That's the one perhaps piece of disaster lore they've kept together. But like, if you're looking for, you know, disaster this Christmas, go for it. But like, for me, it wasn't camp or silly enough to really enjoy.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like disaster noir.
Yeah. Scandi noir disaster. Yeah.
They couldn't help but being miserable about it when they were doing it. And does everybody speak English all the way through?
No. So like the majority of it is in, the threads are basically the Norwegian family. So they're all speaking Norwegian and they seem to be staying at a hotel that is populated only by Norwegian guests. So there's a lot of Norwegian. And then there's a bit of English when, as a kind of lingua franca between the Norwegians and the Spaniards. There's a little bit of Spanish, but like I would say, it's probably about 80% Norwegian.
All right. Okay. Someone says one Christmas TV catastrophe stands out above the rest. That's the Christmas episode of The Bear. Well, that's true. Yeah, that was genuinely nail biting stuff. Our third show is Dexter Original Sin. New episodes every Friday on Paramount Plus. Here's a clip.
My very first crime scene. It felt like Christmas morning. And I have been a good boy.
Morgan, glad you're here.
You and me both.
This is your first crime scene, right?
Yeah.
I remember my first. My captain, this big macho putz, was worried that my weak little lady stomach couldn't handle all the blood. 10 minutes on the scene and he was the one blowing chunks. I'm tiny but mighty. And don't you forget it.
I won't.
Right. Okay. So is this like an origin story for Dexter?
Yes, it is, right? Which is kind of funny because within the Dexter universe, they already did his origin story in like really bad wig flashbacks in like the season one and two of the show. And Dexter is kind of like a funny thing because it ended in 2013. And I think it's one of those shows that the longer it went on, it was diminishing returns and people really kind of fell out of love with it. But it seems to have been a kind of streaming darling under the radar to the point that Paramount is really invested in it. And this is the second spin-off because we had Dexter New Blood, bringing back Michael C. Hall as Dexter. And here is it's sort of a sequel to New Blood and a prequel to the entire show. So it opens with Dexter, Michael C. Hall, on his deathbed, reflecting on his life and looking back to his origins as a serial killer. And he's played in his youth by a Dublin man, Patrick Gibson, who is an Irish actor for whom I don't think this is going to be his big break, but like he's always chugging along and always doing stuff, and he's always attached to things that eventually get cancelled. Like he was in the OA, the original series of that. He was in Shadow and Bone on Netflix, and now he's here on this. But this, I think, will, you know, certainly do his bank balance no disservice, shall we say. Right, so he is younger Dexter, and for me it's kind of like, right, so if you've seen season one of Dexter, you know the plot. He is a serial killer who's the adopted son of a cop who recognizes he's a serial killer and therefore trains him to only enact his murderous tendencies on baddies and be vengeful. And we see that story unfolding here and how he joined the Miami Metro Police Department as its forensic blood splatter expert and all that kind of stuff. But like every single character in the show is also someone who's in Dexter. So it's all younger versions of the exact same cast we already seen, which actually means there's literally nothing new here at all, right? Yeah. Like as in it's Dexter walking around being a bit morose and monosyllabic and odd, but like lovable. And his sister Deb curse wording her way through the entire show and that kind of stuff. His father, played by Christian Slater, gets a bit more fleshed out here because he's dead in the original show. But like everyone else kind of looks like they're just doing cosplaying of the later on characters. and like I just found it completely and utterly uninventive. Right, now that is not necessarily the biggest criticism of the show. What worked in the original formula is kind of working here as well, except perhaps you'll enjoy it more as a newcomer rather than a latecomer, because if you're a latecomer and have seen the show before, well, it's literally everything you've seen before, right?
Isn't it everything you know already? What's the point of it?
That I don't really know. Like, there's been three episodes released so far. They haven't really made a strong case, in my opinion, yet for its existence beyond the fact that you are really missing Dexter right? Mm. Like even Michael C. Hall narrates the entire show, which I actually think kind of robs Patrick Gibson of some of the ownership of the character, because his voice, which I guess is a trademark, the narration was very much a trademark of the original show, but like his voice is just so overwhelmingly used in it that you can never forget that like this is just Dexter Jr. And a spin-off of that show. Like it is what it is. He goes around killing people. He's got a terrible wig in the first episode and then a much smarter haircut for the rest. But all in, like, I just, you know, I just couldn't get it. Like, for me, it didn't make any case for why you wouldn't just rewatch the already streamable season one of Dexter.
Yeah. Somebody who knows more about Dexter than I do, for sure, which is probably everyone. How did Dexter die on his deathbed if his son shot him in a forest?
Dying on his deathbed, I should say, right? So yeah. When we meet him at the very first scene of this, he's being transported to hospital.
Right, having been shot in a forest.
Having been shot in a forest.
Sorry for the spoiler there for anyone who's never seen it, which includes me. Also as well, just in case any of you are planning to cancel your holidays to the Canaries, we did get a message in from Cohen Verbruggen, Director of Geological Survey Ireland. Who says that, while I love geology getting featured anywhere, can you reassure your listeners that Cumbro Vieja is actually not likely to ever trigger a tsunami based on the actual geology?
Tell that to the Norwegians.
Yes, tell that. Well, it wasn't a documentary, Cohen, to be honest with you. Those three shows, again, were Beast Games, new episodes every Thursday on Amazon Prime Video. La Palma, you can stream the entire miniseries now on Netflix. And Dexter Original Sin, new episodes every Friday on Paramount Plus. James, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Happy Christmas to you. And thanks for all the contributions through the year.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.